Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, January 19th, 2018. It's just about 3:30 UTC as we're starting. I'm Sam Minter, and this week, Jen Steele is with us. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Sam.
As we mentioned last week, Yvonne is out and about doing his globetrotting thing, as he sometimes does. I believe at the moment he is on the way home from Bangkok, either in the Doha airport or on his next leg after that. I'm not entirely sure. But he'll be back with us next week. And in the meantime, we have Jen. Let me get our agenda right out there to start with. As usual, we'll have a little segment at the front where we talk about a couple little quick things. But then last time Jen was on with us, we talked a bit about, you know, men behaving badly and everything surrounding that and Me Too and all of this. And after that episode, Jen mentioned to me, you know, there were a few additional things I wish I had said. And I was kind of reluctant to say it because there were so many people online. There were three men online with her. And so, number one, Jen gets to continue and say whatever she wants on it. And, you know, I'll try to back off and just let her rant.
Well, no, it's not that I'm scared of men. It's that they were men I didn't know, and I was trying to actually be polite, and polite is not natural for me.
Ah, yes. So you can be rude and yell at me, and that's cool.
Well, because I've done that before.
I don't mind. It'll be fine. And so that's number one. And then we've got a bunch of Trump stuff to talk about, and we'll probably break it up into two segments. And we were trying to divide it, and can we do like Trump sort of personal stuff and then separate sort of Trump things that are actually policy related? So we may try to do that a little bit, but honestly, the lines get a little bit fuzzy there. So we'll just talk about Trump. We'll divide it up however it seems to make sense based on time or everything else. And that'll be the show. Because we've got a whole bunch of Trump things. Some of the ones I mentioned in the pre-show last time, we've got the shithole countries. We've got Trump and the porn star. In additional this week, we've got Trump's health. We've got more Fusion GPS testimony that is implying certain things about Trump and his businesses. And then we've got the government shutdown and DACA and all of these things going on and Trump's position on immigration, which I guess is tied into the shithole countries. That again, that's why I said it's sort of a sloppy boundary, but
yeah, we had a hard time with that.
Yeah, that's the idea. So, but that's the basic agenda. So, and we'll get to that in a second. I just had a couple of quick thingies to mention before we get to that. One is a correction from our prediction evaluation show, where Yvonne and I, it doesn't change the outcome, by the way, of any of our scores, but both Yvonne and I had predicted that 2017 would be the hottest year ever. And I mentioned that we were wrong because it was the third hottest year ever behind 2016 and 2015. And that is, in fact, what NOAA said. But in the last couple of days, NASA has come out and said 2017 was actually the number two year. So there's a dispute, depending on which government agency you ask for and which modeling, was it number two or number three? But it wasn't number one, regardless.
Okay. So after which one? I can't remember if 16 or 15 was hotter.
I think 16 was hottest.
Okay. So, oh, right. It was up and up and up.
So the question is, was it 2016, then 2015, then 2017, or was it 2016, 2017, and then 2015? But either way,
pretty much, but it's too damn hot.
Yeah. So, except, of course, you know, for the people in the East Coast who are like, it's cold, so there can't possibly be global warming.
Yes, because weather and climate are always synonymous.
Exactly. So, it's,
yes,
it's snowy, and I'm cold, and so, therefore, it must be nuclear winter, not global warming.
I hate everyone.
So another update from a previous show. On last week's episode, we talked a lot about Oprah 2020, and both Yvonne and I were like, hey, if she runs, everybody else is going to have a hard time competing with her. I think that might still be the case if push came to shove and she did it. However, There's been a lot of polling in the last week. Well, at least some polling. And all of it seems to show Oprah not as strong as we may have thought initially based on the big reaction that everybody seemed to have to her speech. There are a lot of people, including a lot of Democrats, who just would rather her not run. And so that's a different question than if she ran, would you support her? And if you've got these five candidates, would she be the one you end up picking in the end after a campaign? But it's not at all a slam dunk where everybody's like, yes, yes, she's got to run. She's got to run. There's certainly people who feel that and feel that passionately. But there are quite a few people, certainly Republicans, but also on the Democratic side, who just, articulate the other position that Yvonne and I talked about, which is basically, hey, look, let's not do the celebrity thing. Let's get somebody who's serious, who knows what they're doing, who's got some experience, etc.
Or at least who hasn't endorsed charlatans a lot.
That would be a plus too, yes.
You know, little things. We're kind of tired of fake news.
Little things like that. And also, you know, as we discussed last week, we don't really know her positions on anything. She's a blank slate on most issues because she just
hasn't talked about that. We still don't know Trump's positions on anything. So, like, why does that matter?
That's true. That's true. And then, let's see, what else? We did have that false missile warning in Hawaii. And we had another one in Japan that followed up a couple days later, which was interesting. But the only additional thing to note is when I recorded the show last week, when I added my comments at the beginning, we really still had no idea exactly what had happened. Now it seems pretty clear it was just somebody clicking the wrong thing in a drop-down menu.
Oh, have you seen the best GIF ever?
Oh, which one is that?
It's the animated GIF that shows like they're about to click the do a drill and then the pop-up ad comes in and moves both buttons down and they accidentally click on the real one.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's spectacular.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that, but I have seen a few screenshots of the actual UI here and it certainly could be better. You know, and it's one of those things where they've got all these pre-filled templates for situations that they expect to happen, which, of course, you understand, because if there really is an emergency, you don't want to wait like 5 minutes for someone to like pack out the new message and write it from scratch. You want them to have the thing that says, you know, volcano or earthquake or nuclear attack ready to go in a few seconds. But at the same time, it's just one of those things where the UI really clearly had very similar things, very close to each other. And
perhaps they should have been a bit further apart.
Perhaps they should have been further apart or in a whole completely different section, not in the same drop down menu. And there was an Are You Sure? There was an Are You Sure alert, but as is often the case with those things, people automatically click the button because they get, you know, habituated to them and don't actually pause to read. It's just like, oh, yeah, I have to click twice. And so they click the Are You Sure button. So anyway, that's that. And only other note, I paid off my Subaru, my car. It's been 5 years. I paid off my loan on the Subaru, so it's all mine now. That's very exciting.
Usually around the time that I pay off a car, we get rid of it for some reason.
I know
it's kind of like clockwork and we pay them off early and then suddenly it's like, oh, let's move back to Seattle downtown and let's sell the car. Or, oh, we're tired of this car. Let's buy a new one.
Yeah, that's not an atypical pattern, to be honest. And of course, that's why leases exist as well, because people are just in the routine of switching cars every few years.
Each case, we have bought out the lease and then, oh, yes, let's sell it. Like, there's something wrong with us.
Yeah, I mean, my typical pattern is pay it off, keep it until it won't move anymore. So I fully expect this car is now 5 years old. I hope I get another 10 years out of it. So we'll see.
Wow. I have zero cars. So, yeah, okay.
I can't imagine having zero cars. I haven't had zero cars since I was a teenager. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had a car when I was a teenager. But, yeah. No, we live downtown, and I walk to work. My husband works from home. It just makes no sense when we have to pay for parking.
Yep. Okay, so do you have anything for this opening segment, or should we
move on?
Nobody
actually cares about me, unlike you, so we can go on. I don't mean nobody. I just mean, like, oh, never mind.
We care about you, Jen. You're important to us. We care about you and your life.
Some other time. We can keep moving. It's fine.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll get to Jen's gender rant. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, Alex.
Here.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, we are back. So, Jen, there were things that you wanted to say last time that you didn't get a chance to say, and B, there have been further developments since then, and including this thing with this guy this week that I don't
Aziz Ansari?
Yeah, him. And I'll be honest on that one. I've read some of the reactions to the article that started this, but I never read the original article. But anyway,
I read the article. The man is horrible at sex. There's no question. No, really. I mean, if you read the article, he does this weird hooking thing into her mouth, and he's constantly, where do you want me to F you? And like, I'm just like, dude. I know you've been a geek your whole life, but come on, get better. But anyhow, so I figured I'd actually start with that, and then I can rant. But I would actually like for you to interrupt and ask questions and clarify, and that's okay. And I will try not to actually be falsely muted. I will try to do so.
I offered to Jen that I could leave the room and just let her go for 15 minutes and then come back.
That kind of cracked me up. Because Sam has actually been the victim of some of my rants in the past. We used to share an office, and I would just rant. So it's not like there's a level of discomfort here.
So I will listen, and I will engage, and if anything you're saying is confusing me or I disagree, I will speak up. So go ahead.
So starting with the Aziz Ansari thing, like, wow, what a horrible situation. I think that, however, it epitomizes, he's a 34-year-old comedian who has made his life basically being awkward, but also being an ally, right? He's a person of color, and he's an ally of women, and at the Golden Globes, he was wearing a pin. I can't remember what that pin says. I should, but I can't. It's been a long day. But anyhow, so this anonymous woman who's 22 or 23 years old told the story under the name of Grace, an anonymous story of how she felt very horrible after a date with him where they got naked, there was some oral sex, and he just kept being awkwardly forward. Putting her hand on his penis, like a lot of things like this, doing this strange hook motion with his fingers in her mouth. I don't know
what that means. Like
taking two fingers and like reaching in her. I don't even know. I read it and I'm like, who would do that ever?
It sounds like some sort of dental maneuver.
It was. As I said, have I mentioned that's not sexy? No woman wants that ever. Probably no man wants that ever, but I'm not going to put myself in their place. Like, I just, even if I'm into you, don't stick two fingers in my mouth and kind of hook something. I don't know. Yes, this gentle maneuver. Anyhow, I mean, I I felt bad for two reasons. One is that she tried to kind of back off, and he would kind of back off, but they were still naked and on a date, and I think he kept, you know, making assumptions and propositioning her again, and then she would kind of back off. And then she called him out on it via text. He apologized profusely. You know, she posted about it. He apologizes again profusely, saying, oh my gosh, I misread the situation. And to me, the reactions themselves say a few things. So there's a few things that I kind of wanted to, I don't know, rant about, exclaim about, okay, talk about, whatever. One is the weird standards that men and women have grown up with and what this means for us as we try to hook up, or, you know, interact or be okay or whatever. Another thing is this zero tolerance thing we now have. Mm-hmm. And then also, the built up anger. And I think the built-up anger goes beyond Me Too and actually goes back into Black Lives Matter and goes into a lot of these things that are coming up that are really hard to deal with. But so first, the first thing I was going to talk about was, now I've lost. I said three things. I'm going to be clear. I'm going to be great. And I've now lost the first thing.
Are you operating off an outline?
Well, I thought I was. And then, I don't know. I looked outside. There were a lot of sirens. And I was like, huh? So, mm-hmm. So one thing, though, that I did want to talk about, and this may or may not have been my number one, Sam will remember when he, you know, hears it, but is the differing standards between men and women. There's the pursuer versus the pursued.
Right.
Right. Women aren't supposed to actually express that we want sex, which is the dumbest thing ever. And men are supposed to be the aggressor. Again, the dumbest thing ever. And it creates these weird situations. And then you watch a lot of movies where she says no and she's expecting him to just keep trying until she says yes.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not even to talk about what porn does to that, which is always like, I don't want you. Oh, my gosh, you're the best thing ever. Or so I hear. I don't actually watch a lot of porn because I think it's gross.
Well, and on the last time you were on, you mentioned sort of Princess Leia and Han Solo and how that movie sort of typified that kind of thing as well. And
It was romantic.
Yeah, and it's all over pop culture. I mean, I saw somebody with a Twitter thread just listing movies from the 80s that all operated like that. Right. You know, and I'll admit as well, I mean, one of the things that, you know, I remember experiencing when I was younger as well was most definitely thinking that, yeah, if somebody said no or not right now or whatever to whatever proposition it was, well, of course you're going to ask again, and you're going to ask again, and you're going to mention it again, and you're going to be persistent, because at some point they might change the answer, right?
That's not what women are taught.
Right.
So this actually goes, so to take it out of the awkward sexual realm, so there's this very popular thing, at least among startups, the whole, like, you should ask forgiveness, not permission.
Right.
That is such a masculine thing, I can't even. Hmm. When I ask forgiveness, not permission, I get in trouble, like horrible job jeopardizing trouble, or at least yelled at, ripped up one side and down the other. What the heck, right? On the other side, when I don't, I get coached, you know, you should really ask forgiveness, not permission more.
Oh, that kind of stuff drives me crazy. Like, I'm, you know, again, speaking on, you know, not just the awkward sex stuff, but just in general, I believe in rules, you know, I believe that the rules are there for a reason and you should follow them unless you have a damn good reason not to. But
most men, especially white men, are actually rewarded for not following the rules.
I mean, I'll give a simple example that pisses me off constantly, almost every single day, which is just, you know, people crossing the street when the signal says not to. Like,
okay, well, Sam, I particularly remember walking across the street and leaving you behind when there were no cars coming and the light was wrong.
Yes.
For you. Yeah. I mean, I was talking away and stuff, and I turned around in the middle of the street. I'm like, there are no cars coming. And you're like, but the light's red.
Right.
So the thing is that, you know, being mostly a Bostonian where the lights are, you know, crossing streets are a game of chicken between car and pedestrian. I'm like, I watch the cars and not the lights.
Yeah. And see, I look at those kinds of, I mean, I want to look at the cars as well, but you know, yeah, the light's red. I don't care if anybody's coming or not. I'm not going until it turns green. You know,
that's still a very Seattle thing. Like, what was it? The Seahawks won. People started like rioting or having, and they're like waiting for the light. No traffic's coming, and then they start like partying, going. That's such a Seattle thing. Since I moved back, though, I've noticed people do. But anyhow, cross lights aside.
Moving on.
But men are effectively taught no is not right now.
Right.
Women are taught. Not just no is forever, but even if I seem to remotely dislike it, you should back off of that for the rest of your life.
Mm.
Right. I was taught very explicitly to read people, read signs, like don't even ask if they look cranky. Forget about keep asking if they say no.
Whereas
don't even ask if they look cranky.
Whereas on the other side, you know, I definitely, and again, I'm not the best in terms of like looking at social cues, even among men, to be honest. But, you know, it was very much like if it's not said explicitly, verbally, with no caveats, then, well, how would I recognize that? Like,
and then I'm totally curious, Sam, were you taught that you could never say no?
Oh, absolutely not.
I was taught that I could never say no.
No,
beginning of my career,
saying no was always a important thing, I guess.
The only thing I was told to say no to was when Nancy Reagan told me to just say no to drugs.
You know, I don't remember a specific lesson of some sort where a parent or an adult or anybody said, yes, you should say no sometimes. It's important to say no. It's just, but I definitely picked that up, and I actually took Nancy Reagan seriously. But even beyond that,
rule follower.
Yeah, you know, I definitely had never remember a time where I felt like I couldn't say no if I wanted to.
Every day of my life, I can't say no if I want to. And this, so when I was 28 years old, I became head of IT for a law firm. And I did a big rollout. And people would come up to me and ask me things. And I'd be like, no, we can't do that. And I got called into HR, who was actually, so the head of HR was technically actually a lower level than I was, but it was still the head of HR, right? Mm. And she's like, you can't say no to people. And I'm like, but we can't do what they want us to do. Like literally computers can't do that. Like that's not actually a possibility. She's like, well, maybe if you don't use the word no.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay. And then literally yesterday, two of the women I work with had this situation in a parking garage where a guy walked over and said, can you jump my car? And they didn't feel like they could say no. And it turns out that they didn't actually jump his car. And he approached the one woman by herself and then the other one came up. And so we think he was kind of trying to have to, like, they didn't even start their car so that it wasn't jumped. But they didn't feel like they could say no to him.
Right.
Right. Now, like I've been taught to never say no.
I admit.
So extrapolate this to unfortunate situations.
Right.
So now, I'm saying to possibly awkward men, I've got the bit in my teeth now, Sam.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm saying to possibly awkward men who can't read social signals. Oh, ha ha ha. That's okay. Cause again, I can't say no.
Hmm. And of course I would read that as she's certainly not objecting. Maybe she even wants this.
I've got my arms crossed and I'm like, oh, that's okay. Let's do something else. Right?
Mm.
So that's exactly what I'm saying. It's like these situations really blow because we have socialized people to basically get into these situations. And it's horrible on both sides. Like Aziz Ansari never would have. Well, he might still be bad at sex, but he never would have like made her feel uncomfortable if he'd realized it. And she would have stopped things earlier if she had at all been taught to say no.
Right. Now, from the description, though, do you think there's a you know, you said he wouldn't have done this if he realized it was causing uncomfort. Is there a bit there where it's like, oh, come on, it should have been obvious. Or
well, that's
or
how women feel.
Well, okay. But
we've been penalized our entire lives if we don't read a situation.
Right. But do you think that there's a, you know, like, is there sort of a level of ambiguity where you can say, okay, I can understand how that person misread that situation. And do you think, like, this example was past that, where it's sort of inexcusable that he misread it? Or do you think that's, yeah, because of all the factors you've just mentioned, I can actually imagine that he really didn't realize and had no idea?
I think that honestly, and to some extent, sadly, he really didn't realize. There is a degree to entitlement there. I'm pretty sure that people don't often say, that women don't often say no to having sex with Aziz Ansari, right? He's a star.
Mm.
Right? So there's that base assumption of this is going to happen because it always happens. But there's also this whole, like, he's been taught that she didn't even say the word no, but he's been taught, oh, she's just playing hard to get. Oh, she's Leia to my Han Solo, right? It's, and she's been taught, I can't say no, so I'm just going to put him off as much as I can and distract him. And it led to this horrendous situation.
Right. So, okay. What do you think the way out of this is?
Everyone sucks. No, that's not the way out. Some of it is getting to my second point. I actually finally remembered my 3 points, and I did actually start with point number one.
Good.
Getting to my second point of zero tolerance. So right now we're coming to this of men are saying she didn't say no. She should have said no. Even some women are saying that. And women are saying he still went too far. He made her uncomfortable. He's in the wrong. And we have this horrible, basically zero tolerance policy towards each other. Like I'm weird, I guess, in that I feel like, okay, if you have honestly apologized and you've moved on, like a lot of people hated Louis C.K.'s apology because they're like, oh, he's ordering from a menu and he was told that he could only have a salad. And so he's having the salad. What I read in his apology was like, oh, crap. I'm not okay. I thought I was okay just because I didn't hear no. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize power. I didn't realize nuances, et cetera, and so on. The man's career is still horrible because, you know, you're still a sexual predator, da, da, da. We have zero tolerance towards that. And some people might call me naive because I think that humanity can be redeemed, right? I think that people can change their ways. Like, I'm a different person than I was 5 years ago. I'm a different person than, certainly a different person than I was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think that getting beat over the head with the clue bad is enough. And so it makes me very sad that we now have zero tolerance. In part because, think of this, men have been socialized to be Han Solo to Princess Leia. But now if you ever were, you're a predator. Like, isn't that horrible? Like, what you have taught to be is now unacceptable.
So yeah,
that's...
I definitely can see that, but even at the same time, and I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, you know, where do you draw that line? I mean, you know, on the...
You don't. A line is black and white.
But if you don't draw that line, I mean, we're talking about things where people's careers are affected, where, you know, Louis C.K. did this and he apologized, but does he get his next job? We're talking about cases where people bring up a situation that happened 10 or 15 years earlier and are calling for people to be fired.
Glad I'm not God.
Even if there's no evidence of them doing anything since that incident 15 years ago. Now, of course, people say usually there's a pattern of behavior, and if they've done it once, they've probably done it a dozen times. But maybe they have, maybe they didn't. Who knows? And so at some point, you do have to make those calls and say, okay, this guy did something 10, 15 years ago, and he may not have even realized at the time that he was doing something wrong, and now he's been called out on it, and he's apologized, he's said he's sorry, he hasn't done it again, he will not do it again. Do you fire him?
Probably not. I realize that every woman listening to this podcast is about to send me hate mail. But again...
And I presume that's different if they did it last week.
if they did it last week, if they'd been called on it and apologized and then did it again, if they ever do it again, right? If they ever do it again, not only are they fired, but they're sued, right? Like, right. They get a lot more scrutiny. But yeah. I find it hard to believe, like, I find it tragic to hold somebody accountable for one thing they did 15 years ago, like, that they've already apologized for, like, to...
And does, you know, if somebody's under the influence, if they've been drinking, does that make any difference whatsoever? Like, you know, people got smashed at a party and did something they regretted. Does that change
the equation? This is where you go back to your pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
There's, wow, you really screwed up. And then there's... okay, we have a pattern here. And it's like, what is it? The obscenity? I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that I swear to you, I only quote that when I'm on here. And yet I quote it almost every time I'm on this program. But it's hard. And that's where like zero tolerance is easy. It's tragic, but it's easy. It's easy to say, no, you're never an okay human again. But to me, I still see there's a human being who made really horrible choices. And I just find it very difficult not to believe that that human being can change. I'm Pollyanna. I get that. But fundamentally, you know, it's like people screw up at work all the time, right? I've managed people for most of my career. They mess up. If I can't forgive them, I'm going to fire people constantly.
Right.
That's not practical. Because hiring is painful. But instead, I talk to them and I say, hey, you did this, you should have done that. Okay. If they keep doing this instead of that, then it's like, okay, let's put you on a performance plan. Okay, you're still doing it. We have to let go.
But what about the I'm argument that yes. says if you don't start operating on a zero tolerance policy, then new people will be like, oh, well, they don't really take this seriously. I can get away with it.
Well, that's if they do it again, they're fired. Right. So I'm not saying that we should treat harassment.
So what? Everybody gets one
like
free grope?
Like we do putting somebody screwing up. I have no idea what you just said, but I'm not saying that we should treat harassment like we do somebody groping somebody at work. Okay. Like they're very different, but let's treat it, you know, I would say treat it more like embezzlement. You get fired from this job, but if you don't get prosecuted, does that mean you can never get a job ever anywhere else? I don't actually know how that works. I've never known anybody to embezzle.
Well, if you don't get prosecuted and get it on your record, there's a question of whether the next employer will even know. Whereas if you actually get prosecuted and you are found guilty of a felony, now you have a record that they can find. What I said when you couldn't hear was basically like, what does this mean? Everybody gets one free grope.
Well, to some extent, they've been getting a lot more than one.
Yep.
And that's where this is hard, and it's hard to talk about.
Well,
and what makes it harder.
Also, I just want to say, it's not just work. Like, we sort of naturally gravitate towards what's happening in the workplace, but the situation you started this segment talking about wasn't in the workplace at all. This was just two people going on a date.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've certainly been in my share of awkward situations, especially as in my early 20s. Now, I got, well, at least in my late teens, I got married in my early 20s and thankfully haven't been in that many awkward situations that were in dating since then for mysterious reasons called monogamy. But again, our choice. But I don't know, people are phenomenally stupid. It's hard. This is a hard question. I find it difficult to think about losing an ally, or given the societal thing that we've put most men under, given if we have a zero tolerance policy to every story we hear about every man ever, no men will work again.
Well, and another thing that you brought up just a few minutes ago that I think is worth exploring as well. I mean, you've got a number of factors here. One is, you know, how long has it been since the bad thing happened? Second is, not all transgressions are the same. Like you, sort of, you know, a stray grope at a Christmas party when everybody's drunk is different than an out and out rape. And there's all kinds of stuff in between, and there's, and making people awkward by telling a stupid, inappropriate joke is something else entirely. And I think one of the things that is about the current situation is there does seem to be a flattening where it seems like everything is equally bad. I mean, no one really thinks everything is equally bad, but it's almost,
but everything's being treated equally bad.
Right.
And this is actually where my third point comes in, which is being, so when I look back on my life growing up as a child, like in the 80s, I realize that there are a lot of things that happened with me that I was socialized to that now I get angry about. Mm. I wasn't angry at the time that, you know, this uncle always forced me to kiss him and would chase me around until he got a kiss. Now I'm really pissed. Like, that's really not okay. I was a little girl.
Right.
And that helped me, that helped socialize me into always letting men get their way. And that was not okay. Because that did not give me the tools to deal with when I was in college. That did not give me the tools to deal with learning how to say no in the workplace. That didn't give me the tools I needed to deal with life. In fact, it took away what men got, which was the ability to say no. And now I'm really mad. But when I was six, I wasn't mad. I was awkward.
Right.
And I can go back and go back and go back. I can go back to the physics TA who at MIT told me that girls couldn't do physics. Okay, that really actually pissed me off at the time. That has continued to piss me off. But I can go back to situation after situation after situation where I was verbally put in my place by men in authority and having to climb and claw my way up to the top of two different careers despite what they said and despite hearing the little voice in the back of my head that told me that I wasn't as good as the men around me and the voices that, quite frankly, in my reviews told me I wasn't as good, or they would tell me that I was better than the men around me and then they would tell me all the reasons I wasn't, which was really weird. So it's now that all of this is coming up, and it's not just for women, but it's also, let's talk about racial tensions. Like, suddenly it's okay to be angry. And we're angry about a lot. I'm angry about 40 plus years of bullshit. And it's hard. It's hard to get angry about that much. But suddenly I'm allowed to get angry. And not only am I allowed to get angry, I'm seeing where it's not okay. Like, all these things that my whole life I thought were okay because I was told to think they were okay, I now realize they're not okay. That's a bunch of crap. So now every time I have these conversations, it's not just I'm giving young women the advice to like own the bitch because people are going to think you're a bitch and you may as well get ahead in your career. I'm like, because they're fucking assholes and they're going to try to keep you down. And now I'm remembering and now I'm really pissed.
Hmm. And I don't think and you're so, the only one.
I think I am so far from the only one. I think that this is... this is why racial tensions are coming to a head. This is why, you know, sexual harassment is coming to this. I actually think this is the reason for the zero tolerance policy is no, never again. I put up with it and put up with it and put up with it and put up with it. And I even thought it was okay. And it was never okay. And that's a tough position to like live in. And yet that is where everyone who's not a white man is kind of right now in America. And it's hard.
Hmm. And what do you think that goes in terms of actually producing changes? Because one of the things that keeps coming up and in regard to this, the story we started the segment on, people keep saying, okay, is this the beginning of the backlash? Is this where, you know, all the men sort of start saying, okay, this is bullshit now. Like,
but enough. It's not a pendulum. It's not a black and white thing. It's not an easy metaphor. It's ugly. It's messy. It's hard. And it's life. And we have to take it on a case-by-case basis. And a zero tolerance policy is unforgiving and horrible because it also open, if you're the one holding people to that policy, it also opens up all of your mistakes for them to pick on. And then you get into this death spiral. But It's only a backlash if people are idiotic enough to keep going with this black and white zero tolerance metaphor. I really hope that this starts making it a hard conversation. You know, the thing Aziz Ansari really needs to be confronted about is that never do that hook motion with your hand again. It's horrible.
That's the most important part of that whole story, huh? Just don't do that.
Okay, also read people sometimes, but definitely don't do that, because what the hell, dude?
I mean, you know, part of this is that, yeah, boys have to be taught to read the room and read the, you know, look at the nonverbal language. Don't necessarily assume literalism only.
And girls have to be taught to say no. And yeah. Girls have to be given enough safe space to say no. Like, as far as I know, given his history and what he said, if she had actually said no, he would have put on his clothes and, like, stopped with the crap.
Well, that's how it actually ended at the end, right? I mean, she didn't actually say no, but she said she had enough and was ready to leave, and he let her, right? I mean, it wasn't...
But we have to come together. It's not just men. That, and quite frankly, in our lives in general, women have to be taught that it's safe to be. It's not just a man's world, and we have to lightly touch the corners, or heaven forbid, I might inconvenience you. I'm not kidding. That's what I was socialized to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's why women have done these experiments where they don't give way on the streets and they run smack into men all the time. If that's not like a physical representation of men think that men have been socialized to think that they own the streets and women are just guests on them, like, I don't know what it is. And it's not like all men don't give way. I'm married to somebody who gives way a little too much when I'm trying to hold his hand and walk down the street, so I feel like I'm chasing him. But he's like, I don't want to inconvenience anyone. But that's how women have been socialized. I don't want to inconvenience anyone.
Now, you just went through that rant that says, you know, hey, yeah, men have to change, but women have to learn this stuff too. I've seen a lot of the pushback to this kind of stuff from women basically saying, you know, no, this is on the men. They have to figure this out. We've had enough.
It is on the men. Give me a safe space to say fucking no. Get out of my way. You want a clear signal? Give me room to say a clear signal.
Right.
Give your children permission to have a clear signal.
Because the thing I've heard so many times in the last few days is, you know, women saying, look, you know, people keep saying, well, she didn't clearly say no, but we're afraid to clearly say no because we're afraid the guy's going to, like, hit us or slap us or is not going to accept
we
that anyway.
I realize safe space is a very, like, ooh, whatever, you're a special snowflake, except that it's literally not safe in a social situation for a woman to say no. I'm at a bar. I can't say no. If they don't notice my wedding band, I have to say my husband likes weather when they ask me how the weather is. I'm not okay. I can't say no to you unless a man has already claimed me.
Well, that's where these misunderstandings that we talked about at the beginning are, because then you don't say no, you say something more ambiguous that tries to give you a little bit of
wiggle. And then they don't know what it is, because then you've been taught to be Han Solo to my Leia, and yes.
Now...
Oh, I'm not saying it's women's fault at all. I'm saying, like... Men need to realize, like, hey, women have been shoved into this box where it is literally physically dangerous to say no. So pull your head out of your ass.
Now, let me ask a loaded question here and just get your reaction
really?
To it.
Just one?
What? Just one right now.
Just one.
Okay. How much of this do you think really is stuff that you can fix by sort of changing overt societal expectations, or is there a part of this that really is biological and sort of how people's brains are built differently? Where is there a part of that, or is it all like, hey, if we all taught our kids properly to begin with, they'd behave?
Yes, because everyone is a perfect parent ever. I'm actually surprised you couldn't hear me rolling my eyes through my mic, but so golly, ha. Is this biological? So let's go first to brain men's and women's brains are different, but the difference between a man and a woman's brain is not appreciably different than any one brain is to any other brain, right? Mm-hmm. There are always going to be differences. There's the whole the testosterone bath in the womb severs the cross hemisphere connections, so men can think more focused and women can think of more things at once. There is an evolutionary argument for that, women have to deal with freaking children and harvesting and the fact that men are trying to get our attention for some stupid shit that they need attention for. But in the grand scheme of things, we're more different one to another than we're different gender to gender, from a physiological perspective in our brains. Society. I blame humans. Humans make humans suck.
So,
and there's no such thing as perfect parents. Sam, I have to admit, our generation makes horrible parents. We are the helicopter parents, right? We are the, I'm sorry, I know you're a parent and I'm not accusing you personally, but we're the ones that have brought up this entitled generation of very young millennials and have gone over their shoulder and kept them from getting jobs and et cetera and so on, which we did in reaction to the fact that we ourselves were latchkey children and horribly neglected, right? There is never going to be a perfect upbringing or a perfect parent. What we can decide as a society to make it okay, to make it okay to make mistakes, to make it okay to have a conversation. I was extraordinarily lucky when I went to college that I fell into some groups on the liberal side of campus that made it okay for me to talk out the very conservative and racist upbringing that I'd had. And not that my parents were conservative and racist, but I grew up in a conservative and racist area, and I didn't even realize I had that. And people called me on it. And I was like, oh, crud, this is not okay. And it took me a few weeks before I'm like, this isn't who I want to be. This isn't how I want to behave. There is nothing in the world that says that a man can't go, oh, crud, this isn't who I want to be. This isn't how I want to behave. And anybody who says different is just being a selfish prick. And yes, I used the male pejorative quite on purpose.
Now, having said all of that, there's this ties into the larger sort of American culture war narrative in terms of there being a significant part of the country that is exactly where you are, where even the men are like, oh crap, we got to do better. But then there's also a huge part of the country that thinks this is, a bunch of feminazis going crazy and trying to change, the basics of how life is supposed to work or something like that. And then, of course, you've got also the liberal men who'll say all the right things, but then continue behaving badly as well. But you've got this fundamental culture war, though, where there's a significant part of the country that would hear what you just said and be like, no.
I'm sorry, that seemed like that encapsulated an entire thought.
Well, my question to you is just like, well, what are the prospects of, like, is it just like, worry about the parts that you can change and the rest will eventually come along or not?
It's keep fighting. It's always remarkable to me and slightly frightening, honestly, that. So this is now my second company in a row where I've been actually kind of third company in a row where I've been the most senior woman in the company. And people weirdly look up to me. And I say weirdly because I feel like I'm a human being just like any other human being. Like I haven't been socialized perfectly and, I make mistakes every moment of every day and all this stuff. But that doesn't stop me from fighting. That doesn't stop me from, I was about to hire a woman who underpriced herself, like who was just like, oh, I take a lateral. No, I'm not giving you a lateral, you idiot. Mm-hmm. I gave her a significant bump in salary. And then I sat her down and I said, don't ever do that. Right. I can't fix the pay gap everywhere, but I can fix it once. And I can fix it again, and I can fix it again. I can have the yelling match that I had years ago when somehow all the men were ranked above all the women in my department where I was a manager. You just have to keep fighting, and you're tired, and you break sometimes. And that's where social media has been great for me, because I'm not the only one fighting. I have a lot of allies in a lot of places. And likewise, I want to be an ally. You know, I have it easy. Honestly, I am an upper middle class educated white woman. I've got it really easy in comparison. And so I want to be an ally to people of color. I want to be an ally to folks that didn't have the privilege of going to a top 10 school. You know, I feel like I've got this, it's a horrible burden and responsibility to simply keep fighting.
Okay. Well, with that, unless you have any last things to say, I think we've covered that topic.
I might be ranted out.
You might be ranted out. You seem like you're ready for a break.
Wouldn't be the end of the world.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and we will come back, and we'll start talking about Donald Trump, who's got some issues along these lines as well. Back after this.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook and you actually, well, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes, and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
Okay, we are back. So I guess to transition from sexual politics to Donald Trump.
To sexual politics.
I guess we should start with Donald Trump paying off the porn star and the porn star
stuff. Don't color me shocked.
and we've already started to hear some clips from this. What's her name? Stormy something? Stormy?
Stormy something was what, as
Stormy
far as
Daniels.
I got.
Stormy Daniels. She apparently gave an interview in 2011 that's going to be published in full, probably between when we finish recording this and when this episode goes out, that is being teased as giving all the sordid details of the Stormy Daniels Donald Trump affair.
You can read that. I'm going to stay far away from it.
There have been little clips of it already coming out, but it's like, to me, like, okay, there's sort of the ha-ha make fun of, like, what the porn star says about what it was like to have sex with Donald Trump. But the more, I guess, pertinent part of this is he was busy paying her $130,000 to stay quiet in the month before the election. Yeah, this is, you know, the original thing may have happened in 2006 or whatnot, but, you know, he was busy paying her off, like, while people were voting.
Ladies and gentlemen, your American president.
and this quite possibly is not the only one. You know, there was one quote in that Fire and Fury book that somebody said one of the lawyers is like, oh, and that lawyer's really good. He took care of, what was it, 100 women? You know, and that,
I can't believe that Donald Trump could take care of 100 women. Sorry.
Uh-huh. And I mean, that may be an exaggeration, but we certainly, I mean, what was it? Just the out and out harassment claims. There were, depending how you count, like 15 to 20 of them that came out during the election campaign. So it's not like,
so
these.
Remember how you were asking when enough was enough? Yeah, it was enough a while ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pattern. You know, how can we tell that it's a pattern of behavior? Here's a big clue.
You maybe the 20th woman to say something. And
I would have gone with third, but you know, maybe that's I'm a baseball fan.
Well, you know, I have to represent the patriarchy here. You know, we got to get to 20. Three's not enough. No, but
unless it was men, because then one would be too many.
Yes, like if we found out he was going after little boys or something, the reaction would be different, right?
Well, unless he was part of the Catholic Church.
Okay, we're being bad, but yes, yeah, you're right. But you know, and look, this particular affair is, from all reports, consensual. Like, and so.
So here's the issue I have, is that, well, I feel like the Democrats lost the moral high ground, but not with Monica Lewinsky, because that was consensual. Like that mm-hmm. was unfortunate and gross. I never needed to know things like that about a cigar, but. But where we really lost the moral high ground was Paula Jones and Jennifer Flowers, and when we didn't take them seriously.
Right. Which was before Lewinsky.
Which was before Lewinsky. Honestly, Clinton shouldn't have been elected president.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had a pattern of behavior. Like, there's no doubt in my mind, and it kind of breaks my heart because, like, he was the first president I voted for, but...
Well, and they taught even back then in 92, and you and I are old enough to remember. But there was this whole talk of the bimbo eruptions and keeping the bimbo eruptions under control during the election season leading up to 1992. And so this was a known pattern of behavior for Bill Clinton.
Yeah. And there I was wearing I Believe Anita Hill buttons and voting for Bill Clinton because there's no cognitive dissonance there.
and, you know, well, and some of these were consensual affairs. But there were reports of cases where it was Anita Broderick, right, who was the one who accused him of an out and out rape.
The one? I can't. Which one was the one that like could identify his penis? I can't even remember.
I forget. Because there were also.
I think Paula Jones.
I think you're right. And there were situations around it, and there are things about the yeah. state troopers bringing him women. There were all kinds of things yes. around there.
And I don't want to make this about Bill Clinton. But we're kind of hypocrites if we don't, like, say, okay, this is ridiculous, but we've seen and voted for this, probably not worse, but we don't have a moral high ground here.
But this also ties to where what you were saying about time frames as well. I mean, that was a long time ago at this point, and, you know, all kinds of people and the Democrats as a whole have evolved to some degree. Now,
true.
A lot of this has only happened in the last year, to be honest, though. I mean, this, you know, a lot
you
of...
mean the Trump stuff?
Well, the Trump stuff, but also just the sort of the societal reaction to it has changed dramatically. Like, the sex scandals of a generation ago, you know, were... You know, oh, they had an affair and they'll resign because they had an affair or whatever. But it wasn't about, you know, the man mistreating the woman. It was about, you know,
the man putting his penis where people didn't think it belonged.
Well, it was sort of the religious purity stuff. It was the sanctity of marriage. Yeah. It was the what is the proper behavior of a public individual. And even when there was, you know, it wasn't. About, you know, was the woman mistreated here? Because you could make the argument that, you know, Bill Clinton may well have had an arrangement with Hillary and they knew what was going on. And if it was
and
all consensual, then it's nobody's
Monica
business
Lewinsky
but theirs.
Problem.
You're right.
Yes.
Like, but at that point, none of the discussion was in the same place it is now. It really was about this sort of... I don't want to say puritanical, but puritanical morality, like, have you conformed to the rules? Whereas now the conversation is more like, you know, did you treat the woman like shit?
Well, that's because the rules have changed.
Okay, I buy that.
You know, it's not like people weren't, you know, screwing around on their wives, etc. I mean, JFK, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that now we're like, if it's consensual, it's okay.
Right.
As opposed to if it doesn't fit into societal mores.
Well,
right?
And again, that's another red state, blue state divide kind of thing. It's very much sort of the liberal progressive way to think about these things is if it's consensual, it's okay. Who cares what it is as long as everybody who's involved sort of agrees and is enjoying it and doesn't have a problem with it.
Gosh, Sam, are you saying I'm liberal?
Right? But whereas a significant part of the country, it's still about, you know, are you following the...
You mean the part of the country that almost elected Roy Moore?
Yes, that part of the country.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, those rules don't count. Come on.
Speaking of Moores.
So I guess back to the...
Okay, back to Trump.
Back to Trump and the situation with the porn star. Again, I look at this as, you know, it's sort of the funny, ha-ha, titillating stuff is the sex part of it. The actually troubling part to me is the sort of paying for silence and trying to cover things up, because it is a pattern with, like, well, who else is he paying off to not say what, you know? And he's got a pattern of everybody who ever interacts with him in almost any way has to sign an NDA, and what's behind all these NDAs, and how, and what's enforceable there and what's not, and how are these people being intimidated, and, you know, this kind of thing. So it's not just, you know, oh yeah, haha, he had an affair and screwed around with this woman. It's, you know, just an additional pattern of, you know, using various techniques to make sure that the truth is not public.
Yeah, he's an unethical SOB.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess like you said, you're not going to read that article tomorrow. I guess I'll have to.
Have fun.
The only thing we've got so far is the Forbes magazine thing. So, yeah. Okay, next. Let's move on to another sort of personal Donald Trump thing. There's the whole thing about his health checkup and, you know, a whole bunch of people saying, oh, the doctor must be lying. There's no way he weighs what he does, or he's the height he is. And they say he did a cognitive test and he passed, and that can't be right either, right? That's bullshit. I look at this and my initial reaction is, you know, some of these things look a little fishy too. I mean, I see the picture of him next to people who are supposedly 6'1", and he doesn't look 2 inches taller or whatever, but at the same time, look, this is not a Trumpy doctor. This is somebody who has, you know, this is the third president he's treated, and he's got a good reputation, and even the Democrats who worked with him have stood up for him and said, look, he's a straight shooter. So I don't know. I'm not.
Yeah, this feels much ado about nothing to me. I mean, there's the whole, like, I can't believe that he weighs the same. He looks like a dumpy idiot. I'm like, yeah, he has no muscle tone. Of course he could, you know, fat and muscle weigh very different things.
Yes. But, you know, and even let's say it is like his weight is 10 pounds off or his height is 2 inches off. Does this really matter?
Hey, I only recently started matching my driver's license again. So, yeah, I mean, how much does it matter?
Now, I guess part of this, I think, is driven by, you know, people sort of who are having a hope that they would do like the cognitive test on him and they'd say, yep. Early onset Alzheimer's, definitely. That's what we see here. That wasn't going to happen.
No, and it reminds me of John Oliver does this whole, like, he'll say something. Excuse me. He'll say something like, we caught Trump in a lie. Oh, my gosh, we got him. We got him. And, like, the confetti will drop and everybody will sing and dance and people, like, and it became this running joke of, like, oh, my gosh, we caught the president in something that he... you know, that other presidents would have been impeached for or right. Whatever. Like, oh my gosh, we got it. And it's just, I feel like people are just like grasping at straws, like, please let this be the thing. Let this be the thing. Let this be the thing. And I'm just like, enough. Like, well, calm down.
And look, you're absolutely right. I mean, like, if this porn star thing had happened to Obama, it would have been something that would have consumed everybody for months and months and months and months. because there was nothing else. With Donald Trump,
it barely takes a freaking news cycle. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I felt kind of weird just even bringing it up because it's been a week since it first came out and it seems like old news already.
Should we actually talk about this on Curmudgeon's Corner? It might be old news.
Right. You know, and I don't know. I think, yes, it fits into the pattern of Donald Trump saying little lies about things that don't matter and maybe even exerting influence to corrupt this poor doctor who ended up having to write down that the guy is 6'3 instead of 6'0 or something.
Oh, who cares?
You know, but it, with everything else, it's like, why this? This seems like, you know, people talk about like all of the distractions that are out there. This seems like a self-inflicted distraction. Why are we even looking at that?
I don't know. Let's move on.
Which actually leads me into Ed's comment. Ed, who's co-hosted the show and is a loyal listener. Ed, on our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, gave a fairly long comment, which I won't read every word of. But basically, he says, first of all, he finds the events of the last week reinforcing his belief that the nation is being played by a master manipulator and that he is embracing very many of the things that he said he would during the campaign. If, for instance, with the release of the results of Donald Trump's health exam, it seems pretty clear that he's in good health and does not have evidence of dementia. This should pretty much lay to rest many of the conspiracy and related theories on why he acts in the manner that he does. What we need to realize is that he has expertly played the mass media for free publicity for several years. He has used them to remain on the front pages and to broadcast his theories, allegations, assertions, and plans to his base. And as we listen to pundits argue whether he's a racist, a dictator, insane, or other, he continues to put in place numerous policies and actions that should be anathema to most U.S. citizens specifically. And then he lists a bunch, which we might get into in a second. But I want to disagree. Like,
oh, damn. I was hoping you'd agree because that makes us pundits.
Yes, I guess so.
Okay, keep going.
I really don't buy that he's the master manipulator. I do think he's an idiot. I think he has a natural skill of manipulating the media. Yes, he has a natural skill at making the attention go to him, on getting the spotlight.
Oh, he's a marketer.
He is absolutely all of those things. But he is an idiot. He doesn't have a cohesive plan, and, you know, Ed lists like 10 different policy things that have resulted from this thing. I don't know that Donald Trump himself has he doesn't care about those policy things to that level. That's where you get to the people around him who are taking advantage of him and using him to get those things done. So, and I do want to make that distinction. There's what the Trump administration is doing versus what Donald Trump is advocating or doing or saying or doing. And I think he's...
So you're saying it's still a circus, but Trump is not the ringleader.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Trump is all about... It's gaining the attention. It's trying to get people to love him and trying to get some respect from people. And he's constantly frustrated that he's not getting that respect. But he doesn't actually care about all of these programs. He'll say whatever he needs to say to get the reactions from the people around him. And, you know, but yes, everybody around him can manipulate that. And because of the people that have surrounded him, yes, to look at some of the things on Ed's list, he has been appointing all kinds of judges with certain very conservative views. They did enact the tax bill. He is alienating a whole bunch of traditional U.S. allies. He is doing other things with trade, and he's the immigration things, including DACA and other things. He is crippling cabinet departments, all of this kind of, yes, accentuating the racial divide, failing to handle Puerto Rico, all of this kind of stuff. I'm reading down Ed's list here, but I don't think these are things where Donald Trump consciously goes and says, hey, I have this policy objective that I want to accomplish. And the way I'm going to accomplish this is I'm going to distract people by firing Comey and acting like I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, and all of this sort of craziness is just an act that he puts on to distract people. And the reality is, if you saw him behind the scenes, that he's actually like smart as a tack and knows exactly what he's doing. I think
Fire and Fury kind of proved that.
Well, you know, of course their story is all that was all made up too, you know, but
no good grief.
But exactly. Like I think that there's enough evidence from people around him that, yeah, he doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah, he is like bumbling around from thing to thing and influenced by the last person who talked to him and all of this kind of stuff. There's plenty of evidence of that. That doesn't mean that his administration can't coherently enact things, because the same kind of distractedness that leads him to always be getting in trouble here or there means that his people can go around doing whatever they want. And half the time he's not even going to know what they're doing. You know, and from a high level also, he's going to, yeah, he does at a very fundamental level. He is a racist, and he does have certain views on immigration, how anybody who's not from, and we're getting into the shithole countries, you know, anybody who's, you know, not from Northern Europe, you know, it isn't worthwhile, you know, things like that. And I don't know how much of it's conscious and how much of it's not, but certainly it seems like a lot of it, he knows what the hell he's doing on that. That's one of the few areas where it does seem like he has a coherent view. But then when you start talking about the details of DACA, and he said repeatedly that he doesn't want these kids to be kicked out, and, you know, well, let's not hurt the kids. And on healthcare, he's said repeatedly, we're going to make a wonderful, great healthcare system. And he's asked aides, well, why can't we have Medicare for all and all of this kind of stuff? So, yeah, he doesn't have those coherent views of any sort, but that doesn't stop the damage he can do, because he is surrounded by people who do have very, very specific and in some cases, to use Ed's terms, policies and actions that should be anathema to most U.S. citizens. Now, we've seen from the election and some of the stuff after it, there's a significant chunk of the U.S. population that it's not anathema to, that love these policy results. And
people suck.
And so, but yeah, I don't think it's the master manipulator. I really don't. I think it is the instinctual, you know, attention gathering. And yes, that serves as a distraction. No, nobody talks about policy for any given amount of time because, oh my God, what did Donald Trump do today? You know, and so, you know, Ed ends with, we need to change the dialogue away from insults and slurs about his hair, golfing, language, mental capacity, and family relations, and accentuate the dialogue on U.S. citizenship, values, freedom, international relationships, etc. And I appreciate the thought, but the reality is, and yes, we should talk about like the policy implications and how people are being negatively affected. And specifically, I think it would be useful to spend a decent amount of time figuring out how to articulate how Donald Trump's policies are actually hurting Donald Trump voters. But we're not going to change human nature here. We are going to be distracted by the shiny. Most people glaze over entirely if you actually start talking policy details. I mean, I glaze over when you really start talking real details, because we're not all wonks. But I don't know. And I'll disagree at another level, too, which is that what is really unique and different about the damage that Donald Trump is doing is about the crazy Donald Trump stuff. Because frankly, from a pure policy level, it's not that much different than if you'd elected any generic Republican. maybe some things are a little overboard, but from a pure policy perspective, you know, the rest of the Republicans have the same attitude on a lot. Well, a significant chunk of the Republicans have similar attitudes on immigration. They certainly do on taxes. Many of these things are sort of generic Republican positions in terms of what's actually being implemented. Some of them aren't. Some of them are a little bit more extreme than sort of the mainstream Republicans would have been a few years ago. But a lot of it is. But the real damage I feel that Donald Trump is doing is not policy-wise. Policy-wise, most of these things, you know, change the Congress, change the president, those things can be reversed. And of course, certain people will have been hurt in the meantime, but you can reverse the policies later. But he's fundamentally damaging what people think of in terms of what is acceptable and what is not, and how people interact with the office of president and what to expect from it. And that damage is going to last far, far, far after Donald Trump is no longer president.
Yep.
I don't know. I just ranted for a while on that one. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you stated it. Wow, this sucks. Okay.
So then, shithole countries.
Oy vey.
Now, the one thing I'll start off on this one, on my particular rant on this one, is that I really regret, like, it blew up because of the word shithole, but that really missed the point.
And, yes.
And so everybody started getting fixated on, did he say shithole or did he say shit house? And look, oh my God, all the reporters are saying house. Shithole on TV, and it's being printed in the paper. And I was amused by all of that, too. I'm like, oh, my God, the New York Times and Washington Post aren't shying away from it. They're just saying it. And CNN is saying it on the air. And, you know, I was amused by all of that, too. But that allowed the defense of this to be, you know, you're getting hung up on a word. Yes, he used salty language, or maybe he didn't say that exact word. Maybe he said shit house instead. All of this kind of stuff. Whereas the actual point, and certainly some people have pointed this out, but I think it ended up getting washed out to some degree, is the real problem was his differentiation that says, we don't want these countries, but what about Norway? You know, that's where it really came in, is because the tie to the sort of racist argument that people from some countries are okay and people from some countries aren't. And people kept trying to couch it in terms of, like, he wants merit based, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's already, you know, very merit based. Like they argue about this lottery and say, well, the lottery just lets people in by chance, but the lottery is to pick from which of the people who you've already selected with all kinds of criteria that they can't even get into the lottery unless they qualify.
Right.
You know, it is already a very high bar, you know,
there is a fundamental assumption a lot of people have that we're still all like, give me your tired, your poor, not give me your skilled workers.
Right. And, you know, I don't know. So it really frustrated me that the argument seemed to take a detour. And yes, everybody was saying, you know, oh, this proves Trump is racist, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that it was tied into the language, as opposed to, and this gets to what Ed was saying, the policy question here, was really frustrating, I think.
Yeah, it turns out we're still 12-year-old boys that like to be titillated by things.
Oh, titillate. Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on shithole countries? It's all tied into the government shutdown DACA stuff, and I guess we can take a break and then get into those.
That sounds like a good plan.
We'll be back right after this.
Do. Hello, this is Emma. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties: popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Popular Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for Alan Alda. Alan Alda, born Alfonso Joseph D'Abruzzo, January 28, 1936, is an American actor, director, screenwriter, and author. A seven-time Emmy Award and Golden Globe Award winner. He is widely known for his roles as Captain Hawkeye Pierce in the TV series Emma S.H., 1972-1983, hosting of Scientific American Frontiers, and as Arnold Vinnick in The West Wing, 2004-2006. He has also appeared in many feature films, most notably in Crimes and Misdemeanors, 1989, as pretentious television producer Lester, and The Aviator, 2004. As U.S. Senator Rowan Brewster, the latter of which saw Alda nominated for the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. That's all there is to it. See? Fun, entertaining, educational. And short. Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do-do-do.
Okay, so we are back, and, you know, one of the things that's going on right now is this whole government shutdown debate, and I don't think we're going to get too deeply into that on this show, because we are recording this on Thursday evening U.S. time, and the show will probably come out Saturday afternoon U.S. time, and in between is the big deadline that everybody's trying to work through, and there's all kinds of craziness as we're recording this. The House passed a continuing resolution kicking this forward to like February 15th, something like that, middle of February, but it's completely unclear what the Senate is going to do.
I feel like you may as well just like pause here for a moment and leave room for a Sam from the future comment, but yeah.
Okay, here's Sam from the future. Do-do-do. Sam from the future here, and the government was indeed shut down. Woo! Specifically, the Democrats did decide to fight on cloture, so require the 60 votes. The final vote was 50 votes for cloture, 49 against, with one non-voting. That was John McCain, who is out being treated for his cancer. But it wasn't a party-line vote. Which made it more interesting. There were five Democrats voting yes: Donnelly, Heitkamp, Jones, Manchin, McCaskill. And there were five Republicans voting no: Flake, Graham, Lee, McConnell, and Paul. And I'll note that McConnell was actually for cloture, but voted against it. It's a parliamentary trick when the leader votes against what they wanted to, so that they can file a motion later to bring it back if they want to, blah, blah, blah. So it's really five Democrats going against their party and four Republicans, but it's officially five because of McConnell. Whatever. Anyway, enough from Sam from the future. Back to Sam and Jen from the past. Do-do-do. Okay.
Okay, well, now that everybody knows what happened.
Yes, exactly. So we're not going to speculate on that because we don't know as we're recording this. But some of the dynamics here are interesting, I think. One is, just like he did on the surveillance thing a week ago, Donald Trump has sort of stepped all over himself, again, sort of proving he doesn't really know what's going on, with sort of contradictory tweets and mixed messages to the Congress about what he wants and what is acceptable. We've had numerous people in Congress, on the Republican side in Congress, basically complaining that Donald Trump won't tell them what he'll agree to and what he won't. And so they're kind of wishing he would, so that they would know what to do, because they don't want to pass something that then he would say is unacceptable. And meanwhile, he told them pretty much explicitly, send something to my desk and I'll sign it. Of course, that was in the context of the immigration deal, which originally the Democrats were pushing to have a solution to DACA included in the budget stuff. It became clear that wasn't happening, and that's why they're only kicking the can down the road another month again. But you've got a lot of divisions showing, and also there's the big question of, if the government shuts down, who will be to blame? It's, you know, the Republicans have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. So the Democrats are saying, well, of course, it's the Republicans. The
Also, who is then going to bring the president a cigar in the Oval Office?
Are we back to cigars in the Oval Office?
I just couldn't resist. It kind of had to be said.
Yeah, because that happened during the government shutdown. In the
it happened during the government shutdown, yeah.
She was bringing him pizza and cigars.
I know, but I had to go back to... Okay, anyhow.
Everybody seems to be saying that it will be the other side's fault if there's a shutdown. I've heard some people say, well, it's everybody's fault. To me, like...
Oh, really? We've gone to playground politics? I'm shocked.
We've gone to playground politics and finger-pointing and who will get the blame. And traditionally, whenever this has happened, the Republicans have ended up getting the blame. But... And they probably would this time, to be honest. But I'm also looking at the specifics of how it would play out. And I honestly, like, where we are right now, it's passed in the House, so we're past that hurdle. There's a question of how many Republicans in the Senate would go for this. Do they actually have 50 for this continuing resolution? But the block looks like it's potentially the Democrats imposing the 60-vote filibuster limit. And so to me, it actually seems pretty simple. Like, if I'm not being partisan here and trying to be objective... If the Republicans don't even have 50 votes, then okay, blame the Republicans. If the Republicans have more than 50 votes, but they can't keep the government going because of a Democratic filibuster holding to the 60-vote limit, well, then it's the Democrats' fault. I don't know. Because
so you're saying the math.
Sam from the future here. I just thought I'd interrupt one more time. I laid out some pretty simple rules for who's to blame, but... As I mentioned earlier, there didn't end up being a party line vote. You had a whole bunch of Democrats voting with the Republicans and Republicans voting with the Democrats. And that really muddies the water a lot, to be honest. Plus, you also have the scenario where it's fairly clear from talking to everybody here that there is a bipartisan majority for moving forward that requires... most of the Democrats and a few Republicans, but it doesn't have a majority support within Republicans, so Republicans don't want to bring up those solutions. And also, Donald Trump was presented with a couple of deals that had been made in a bipartisan way to get past this that he at first accepted and then rejected. That led to this. So the bottom line is the whole blame game really has gotten very, very muddy. And you can make a reasonable case either way, or you can make the reasonable case that it's everybody, or you could make a reasonable case that, you know, Congress is doing what they can given Donald Trump confusing everybody. There's all kinds of different ways you can look at it. Bottom line, it's a clusterfuck. Yeah, because the filibuster rule is basic. The filibuster vote is basically, do we want to vote to continue on to actually voting on the bill? It's do we close the debate and vote on the bill, which has a 50-vote threshold? And I think if the Democrats truly believe the Republicans don't have 50 votes, they should call the bluff. Don't impose a filibuster. Say, okay, let's vote. Let's go to vote on the merits and see what happens. And then if the Republicans don't get 50, okay, then it is the Republicans' fault. But if they prevent it from even getting there, then yeah, it should be the Democrats' fault. They're the ones who actually stopped it. And I don't know. And also there's the, with a continuing resolution like this, no, it doesn't solve DACA. Yes, it's only pushing this back a month. However, there's nothing actually in the continuing resolution that the Democrats object to on principle. They're funding the government for an additional month, and they're funding this child protection thing that the Democrats have wanted for a long time. They threw it in there to try to get Democrat support. So passing this is better than not passing it. So... they're trying to play some strategic game of, you know, we don't want to keep kicking the can down the road. And yes, we want to deal with DACA now. And we're trying to use this leverage. And I understand all that. But it all seems like a bunch of bullshit to me, to be honest.
No kidding.
Okay. One last thing to mention, and then we'll wrap this up because Jen's falling asleep.
Yeah, okay. I haven't started snoring yet.
There was last week there was the Fusion GPS testimony from the Senate that came out, and Yvonne and I talked about that for a long time last week. This week the House released the Fusion GPS testimony from the House. Apparently a lot of it repeated what happened in the Senate, which you would expect. But the one piece that seems to be different about the House testimony is there was a significant portion specifically about Fusion GPS thinking that they had serious indications of Trump Organization money laundering, basically using real estate in Trump Tower and elsewhere in various schemes where money was being funneled from Russian organized crime, which, and Russian organized crime may well be connected to the Kremlin as well. That's an additional possible wrinkle. But basically Russian criminals buying lots of Trump property. And also a scam that they were running where the Russian connections would state that they were buying the property and sign documents to that effect so that Donald Trump could get loans on the property to build it in the first place, and then the money would never arrive, and people who really bought the property would be left holding the bag when everything went bankrupt. All of these things are potential crimes. Now, Fusion GPS said, look, we found a lot of interesting things pointing us in this direction, but we don't have the power to subpoena. We don't have the power to get documents. We can't prove any of this. It's just a pattern that is consistent with this and looks very, very suspicious. That's where that left off. And I think, you know, the House committee is unlikely to aggressively follow that up because controlled by Republicans who don't want to follow it up.
Have we ended up here?
I think it points us at yet another place that if the Mueller folks haven't been deeply looking into already, they will be. But I suspect they're already there, to be honest.
I hope so, because dear heavens, it just, the corruption runs deep. And I'm sure that this isn't the first administration. It just seems to be like, they don't really care if they're caught. It's just ridiculous.
And you know, Yvonne and I have said this on the show before. Well, specifically, I've said this on the show many times before. It's like the Russian collusion thing, like whether or not there was a real quid pro quo between the Russians and Donald Trump. Like, okay, maybe there was, but that's going to be extremely hard to prove ever happened. But these financial misdealings by Donald Trump and the self-dealing once he's been president, these are like right there on the surface. You don't have to dig far to find these at all. There's got to be all kinds of crap here that, you know, because the whole family seems to be built on the notion of skirting the rules and pushing right up to, and tying back to our first discussion, I guess, you know, the rules are meant to be broken. You know, do what you want to do and then, you know, apologize later if you're caught. And so all of this stuff is like right out there. It's so corrupt. It's so clear that there's this, you know, the Trump family has been connected in one way or shape or form to organized crime for decades and decades, significantly Russian organized crime, it looks like. And okay, I can't prove that, but it seems like there's all of these pieces are lining up. And then as soon as he became president, is money being funneled to his own stuff constantly? Come on, guys. You know,
it's so ridiculous. I mean, granted, while I technically lived through the Nixon thing, I was, you know, born then. And I understand that people have said, look, it took a while to ramp up then, all that stuff. But I'm just like,
yeah, it took years.
My mind is boggling.
Yeah.
Sam, are you still there?
I'm okay. Still here. I just, you know, and again, there's, it's a question.
Are you stunned speechless?
Yeah, I'm stunned. I keep getting, specifically, like, the people on the Republican side who seem to have made the grand bargain that we can look the other way and not care about any of this stuff because we're getting the policy things that Ed mentioned. You know, we're getting the tax bills. We're getting policies that are mean to immigrants from brown countries. You know, we're getting all of these things that we like. And so who cares if he's, you know, who cares if he's a con? Who cares if he's self-dealing? Who cares if he's an asshole? Who cares if he's done all kinds of horrible things to women for his entire life? You know, because he's our asshole. And so that's okay. And it's just, that's the kind of thing that makes me say, like, whatever thoughts I had before about, you know, sort of the honorable Republicans who had a consistent worldview that maybe I didn't agree with everything on, but, you know, some of the financial stuff, maybe I was like, okay, I could, yeah, I can see some of the these points or that point or, you know, a libertarian orientation on some things, but like this kind
of stuff.
But
they're the ones stepping down and leaving office. Like, they're like, they're going like, I can't even, and like going away. And I'm like, thanks.
And so you're left with this and, okay, maybe you got a few of these policies out of this, but look what you've done. And it, especially you look at like the evangelicals who supposedly are all about morality and like, they don't care about any of this.
Oh yeah. I've got like, I don't know. They probably haven't read the Bible or something. I have. And my mind boggles. I'm going like, I don't understand.
And yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see as the investigations continue to churn and what happens next. And the next scandalous story of Donald Trump, they'll undoubtedly be more next week. There is every week, right? I mean, it just never ends. So
it's so ridiculous. It just cracks me up. I'm like, anything that happened during one of our normal weeks that had happened to any other presidential candidate, like our heads would have exploded. Or not a presidential candidate. Wishful thinking. President.
And now we're just like, oh, that's Wednesday.
Oh, it's a porn star? Okay. What the hell? We've lost our freaking minds.
Okay, then. I think that's a show. Thank you, Jen, for joining us.
Thanks, Sam.
I hope you had fun again.
I did. I felt like I got the full rant out as opposed to getting like actually awkward.
Okay, good.
I got awkward, but I always get awkward. So there is that.
Well, thank you, Jen, for joining us. Next week, Yvonne will be back. I'll do my usual end of show stuff. Go to facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner where you can see the episodes, comment, give us questions. Go to iTunes and leave a review. That's always good for us as well. And if you really like us, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner, throw us a couple bucks here or there. That's always fun too. And that's about it. Any closing words from you, Jen?
Thanks so much for having me on the show and for letting me rant.
Okay. Yvonne's back next week if all goes well. And so everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.